Blog Talk Radio.
Nobody ever told you. I just want to let you know that you're beautiful. Never met a girl quite like you. Yeah. Listen.
You look so good to me, girl. I just want you in my world. You're so beautiful. That's why you touch my soul. Your sexy smile and your pretty eyes make a man wanna go wild. I love your style, girl, you turn me out. I can't help but looking at your sexy lips, sexy hips. Girl, you turn me on. That's why I wrote this song. I want you to come to my home, girl. Just me and you alone, girl. Got my eyes on you. You make me feel some type of way when you're laying down in your sexy lingerie. Never been with a woman like you. Couldn't leave if I wanted to, 'cause I would never find another. You're my one and only love. Searched all over, couldn't find a girl
Good morning, everyone. You're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I am, of course, Angela Butler. Today, as I was saying earlier, the interview is Mr. Hashim Nzinga. He is the leader of the New Black Panthers. So without further delay, how are you this morning, Mr. Nzinga?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. I'm glad you could call in.
Well, it's good to be on your show. I heard a lot about it.
Yes, sir. Show Talk with Angela Butler. Yes, sir. It's going into its ninth year, and it's so great to have you call in this morning and on the show to grant me an interview.
Yes, ma'am.
That's my first question. As the leader of the New Black Panthers, what is going on in Georgia with Ms. Stacey Abrams, the Democratic nominee for governor there in Georgia? How are you helping her?
We're helping her by doing what almost anybody who's of any age, you understand, especially anybody of color who's any age, understand. This is probably one of the most critical years dealing with politics in a long, long time, because we got a madman in the White House.
Yes,
and he's
sir.
Trying to surround himself with people that think like him, and it's bad for us. So what we're doing what every citizen is doing at this time. We picking and choosing candidates that has a platform that better fits what our kids need and what our communities need. And some people always get involved in talking like revolutionaries don't supposed to vote. Our voting is beneath us. You know, there's been lots of things written in the revolutionary world about voting. One of the most important things ever said about voting was Malcolm X said, you got to control the politics of your community. And I don't get into that foolishness anyway, because I'm a political person. And we live in a democratic, even though we want our own nation, even though we work toward our own nation, we hadn't got it yet, which means my seven children and my wife, and we got to wake up every morning in this country called America, and we got to look at a constitution that we got to abide by or try to live by. And one of the greatest things about that constitution, unlike the 1619, when they bought the first 20 slaves off a ship in Jamestown, Virginia, who couldn't vote. Unlike in the 1800s, couldn't vote. Unlike the 50s and 40s, and eventually the Civil Rights Movement. Well, we can vote now. We've seen great impacts on voting. Here in DeKalb County, where I live, we are the second richest black county in America, mainly because we surrounded ourselves with black politicians, some good, some bad, but mostly good. But at least we get to go down to our city council meeting and talk to our city councilman. At least we get to go down to our council meeting and talk to our mayor. At least we can go over to our county commissioner office and talk to him about what we think is good for us. When you let somebody control the politics of your community and they don't even want to communicate with you, you lose the ability to control the most important thing in this world, which is your tax money. And that tax money caused America to come into existence, because everybody want to praise George Washington as the president of the United States. And when you go to the White House, they want to have George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and all of these type photos all around the White House. But all of those people were rebels. All of those people fought against this system that the British ran. And Paul Revere said the British were coming. And Christopher Atok was the first to die, a black man, in what they called a Tea Party. But it wasn't a Tea Party. It was a rebellion. It was a group of colonists who got together and said, if you're not going to let us control what our tax money do, if you're not going to give us a voice, we're going to rebel. And that group of people rebelled. And that group of people are the ones who wrote this Constitution that I talk about. They give us this pursuit of happiness. But just so happened that group of people were white and were also from England. And so they kept some of the England ways, and they kept us 3/5 of a man, and they kept us in slavery after the great article was written that every man should have a, you know, to pursue his dreams in this country. So we had more work to do. And as we know, when George Washington died, he owned over 125 slaves. So I just say this. Thank God for the Harriet Tubmans, the Frederick Douglasses, and so many who pushed and kept pushing till we got the right to, if we come together, to control the politics in our community and control the politics in this country. So I said that for the backdrop that this is a critical time for any leader of any organization to make sure our people understand clearly that we have to get involved in who's going to be our state legislators, who's going to be our county commissioners, who's going to be our who's going to be over our school board, who's going to be the senator of our state, who's going to be the county commissioner, who's going to be your congressman, and who's going to be your president and vice president, and who's going to be your governor. And so to say all of that, sister, is to say we have slated and looked at and studied the people who are best for us at this time, and we're supporting them, and we go out and we canvass and we try to rally the troops, and we took over 350-some people to the polls to vote this past week. And because of a lot of stuff we did and other people like us did, now Stacey has a judge ordering a recount on the votes. And because of a lot of people like us, the Georgia governor race is not over yet.
That's true. This is also the Black Panthers and the new Black Panthers, Mystic and Zynga. I think it's wonderful what's going on in Georgia. And here in Florida, we just recently got the right, that's over 150 years, the right for people who have been incarcerated in state prisons to be able to have the right to vote. So that's major voter suppression. you know, and I was one of them who voted for that right. But I've been a voter since I was 18. I've never missed any elections. Understand the importance of politics and the right to vote. I hope Ms. Arab wins, and I hope Mr. Andrew Gilliam wins here in Florida. Okay. Has she been threatened?
Let me say one thing on that note. As a very strong brother who was denied his right to vote. He had came out of jail after 10 years, went to law school, and still couldn't vote in Florida. And when he was denied the right to vote, he went on a, he said, if I can't vote, everybody who can vote, I'm going to make sure they vote. And he punished the state of Florida by going door to door, taking people to the polls and registering people to vote, and he started a movement. But I just so happened to get lucky enough to sit with the senator who in Georgia the bill that they based the Florida bill off of was here in Georgia, and one of the senators who wrote the bill, I was with her a couple of months ago, well, a couple of weeks ago. So that's how important politics is. Now you got millions and millions of felons who came back to this society, who has paid their dues, whatever they've done, and now they got the right to vote. And if that would have happened last year, those felons, we know when it comes to incarceration, the numbers speak for themselves. Most of those guys look like me. Most of these ladies look like you. Those votes could have had y'all a black governor right now.
Yes. Yes. But that was the whole point. They passed that law after slavery was abolished here in Florida because apparently they were afraid that the black people, the former slaves, and my grandfather was a slave, my great-grandfather, who I knew, they were afraid that they would treat them, the ex-slaves, one of them was my grandfather and grandmother, like they treated them during slavery. That was the excuse for the lynching, for the law, Jim Crow laws, and all of those things. Yeah, so that was the excuse for fear. But anytime you treat a human being like less than a human being or three-fifths of a human being, and you have that mentality that is still less than you, they're not the same as you. You know, things like that will always happen. Such laws, like standing ground and all those different laws. Okay, here in Florida. So, Mr. Nzinga. As the new Black Panther, what you did, like, let's say in the last year, I know you were talking to me last night, or yesterday afternoon, and you were talking about the gentleman that you respect so much and that you were going to carry this through to see the execution of the white man that killed Mr. James Byrd Jr. back in the 80s. The drag-by-truck lynching, which is a horrific, horrible murder, which Mr. Ricky Jason has said on Show Talk with Angela Butler before that he died almost worse of a death than Jesus Christ. Your leader that was before he's deceased now, do you believe this execution is going to take place in Texas, sir?
Well, let me say this. This is a long time coming. I remember the day when the leader you was talking about was the most honorable, Dr. Khaled Muhammad, which was the chairman of the New Black Panther Party, but not at the time of James Byrd's death. He had just been shot in Riverside, California, and we brought him to Dallas, Texas to heal his wound and to avoid the assassination attempt on his life. We're talking about Dr. Khaled Muhammad.
Yes, sir.
And while we were in Dallas, Brother Aaron Michaels, who had restarted the New Black Panther Party at that time, was like a local young man that had a lot of determination, a lot of spirit. And the Honorable Dr. Khaled Muhammad had 50-some years of experience. Well, at that time, he had 30-some years of experience. I'm sorry. I've been the Supreme Captain of the Nation of Islam. He was the National Assistant to Minister Farrakhan. He had traveled to the world. He had been in the jungles with Idi Amin. He had been to Libya, Egypt, all over the world, training soldiers. And as you know, and anybody know that live in America, when you're the supreme captain in the Nation of Islam, that means you over all the soldiers in the FOI. so he was well trained. Young brother Aaron Michaels had a heart and had met a brother named Michael McGee out of Milwaukee who was going to start the Black Militia. And Aaron decided he was going to start the Black Panther Party, and he got sued, and they wouldn't let him do it. So he put New on the beginning of it. So when we took Dr. Khaled to Dallas, Texas, to heal from the assassination attempt, I introduced him to Aaron Michaels. And out of that relationship became a brilliant move on Black people's part. Dr. Khaled Muhammad at that time had been suspended from the Nation of Islam. So he was like a leader with 30-some years of experience worldwide with no home. And Aaron Michaels was like a young leader, fired up and ready to go. But he didn't have the connections in California, Chicago, L.A., you know, New York, Atlanta, Florida, Kansas, Denver, different parts of the world that Dr. Khaled had traveled. And so with that union, eventually Dr. Khaled ended up partnering with Aaron Michaels and the New Black Panther Party. Eventually they made him the chairman. And the New Black Panther Party went from maybe 2 chapters to 36 chapters all over the country. And in saying that, during that time, we were in Dallas. I was from Dallas, Fort Worth area. And we heard about this horrific crime. It almost seemed like a movie. When we heard about it, it seemed like that can't be true. But then as the reports started to flood the radio and flood the TVs, we realized that Brother James Byrd really had been tied behind a truck with a chain and pulled for miles through a city called Jasper, Texas. This was back in June of 1998. And when it sunk in, Dr. Khaled started to mobilize the New Black Panther Party to head to Jasper to see if this was really going on. And we went to nightclubs, we went to YMCAs, we went to street corner stores, and we got every Black person who could walk to go to Jasper, Texas. Because if this was true, at that time we didn't know if it was going to be a all-out war or all-out attack on Black people in Jasper, because it was the most horrific crime that we had encountered in a long time. And we didn't saw some crimes in our days. You know, we can't go over all of that. It'd be too long. But so as it got to be revealed that Lawrence Russell Bruner, Sean Allen Berry, and John William King had picked this man up while he was walking home, stopped somewhere along the way and put a chain around his neck and drug him until all his body parts dismembered this man's body all up and down the highway. And
he was chained behind his truck.
Correct. And what people don't know, we played such an important part of that, that they made a movie called Jasper, Texas, about the Black Panther Party and Dr. Khaled. And my friend Lou Gossett Jr., our Academy Award winning Lou Gossett Jr., played the mayor's part in the movie. So people can get that movie, Jasper, Texas. And it's about the Panthers coming into Jasper, and it's about the James Byrd murder. But to get back to the situation, we were very angry. And then we heard that on the day the Byrd family decided to put their son to rest, that the Ku Klux Klan and some of these people who support John William King and Lawrence Russell Bruner and Sean Allen Berry decided to do a white power rally downtown why James Byrd funeral was going on. So you get a scenario where the Jesse Jacksons and Al Sharptons and everybody's heading to the church because everybody want to do the eulogy, like always. Everybody want to be seen because even Bill Clinton was there, which don't mean nothing to me, but I'm just talking facts. But what ended up happening is we said we ain't going to no funeral. We was going to go to the funeral. But we said we can't go to no funeral and sit in no funeral while the Klan are over here celebrating this man's demise and murder. So we organized a group to go and challenge this white power rally. And this white power rally, like always in America, was defended and protected by the sheriff, the highway patrol, the FBI, because I guess they got a permit. And but anyway, if you go back and watch the footage or watch the original footage, you would see that all of those powers that be couldn't keep Dr. Khalid Muhammad and Attorney Shabazz and others from getting to them Klan. And we chased them down Klan from downtown Jasper, Texas. We had them Klan running to their cars, running to their motorcycles, and trying to get the hell out of there. And ever since, we've been on this case. And anybody who knows this case knows that Sean Allen Berry turned on Lawrence Russell Bruner and John William King, and he told the truth what happened. So because Sean Allen Berry told the truth, they lightened his sentence, and he got life in prison. Lawrence Russell Bruner was executed September 21st, 2011, right around 9 to 10 years after James Byrd's murder. Most time on death row, you get enough appeals, and if you got good lawyers, you can stay on death row probably 10 years. So Lawrence Russell Bruner lasted about the basic time, but he was executed, like I said, September 21st, 2011. But this John William King evidently had some legislators and politicians in his family that somehow he beat the system now for almost 30 years. And he was the kingpin of the execution of James Byrd. So we're looking forward to what has happened. We've been keeping up with it. And we thank Brother Ricky for keeping up with it hour to hour, minute to minute, second to second. We've been keeping up with it from a distance, but Brother Ricky been keeping up with it, keeping up with it. But as we know, on a couple of months ago, his last appeal was exalted. And so now John William King is about to get an execution date. And we applaud it.
Yes, sir.
Saying something, you got to talk a little louder because a lot of
I'm
times.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now? I said, I'm glad that he will have an execution date too. And I'm not necessarily for murder, but some not for stand your ground in the here in Florida in the form that is in now stand your ground. There's a law in Florida, but it was for homeowners and business owners. But now stand your ground means that you can, that my home, which is in the panhandle of Florida where I live at, in the panhandle of Florida, if I go to Orlando and I decide I want to kill somebody for jumping on me or for saying something I don't like, I can kill them right there in Disney World. And that Standing Ground is supposed to, the original form is supposed to be for homeowners and business owners, you know, to protect their property and themselves and family members. But anyway, that has nothing to do. Mr. King should be executed, and I'm not usually for such things when it comes to murder, because there are so many black people who have been murdered by policemen. And with Stand Your Ground, I'm usually not for things like that, because usually it's the black person being killed or executed. Like here in Florida, it's quite a few blacks on death row.
I'm for it on an individual basis.
I am. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And this basically, and then when you say Stand Your Ground, what happened is, throughout American history, every time we as Africans in America achieve power, then this system has to buck our power. It could be simple, or it could be something very, very powerful and meaningful. It could be some very powerful meaning, like when Barack Obama became the first black president. A guy named Chuck Todd wrote a book that I read called A Stranger in the White House. Now, all them name crackers been in the White House, they wasn't strangers to the White House. It became their house that the slaves built anyway. But when a black man get in there, it became a stranger to the White House, and that was a backlash. And that backlash, whenever black people start getting power, now all of a sudden they want to do a Stand Your Ground law. And the law wasn't meant for us. It was meant for them, because black people had a sense of pride and dignity when Barack won. And anytime they see, they used to, in South Carolina, have a law. If you were black and you wanted to laugh, you had to put your head in a barrel, and you had to laugh in the barrel and then come out with either a frown or a straight face. White people were so stupid and so dehuman. They wanted to dehumanize black people from even smiling. Now, you're a damn slave. You lowest you can get in this country, and you still find a way to smile and be happy. That made them mad that you could be happy while they spend their whole life trying to make you miserable, selling your wife, selling your children, whipping you, burning you at stake, lynching you, and you still find a way to find a smile to keep making it through it. So I said all that to say this. When Jack Johnson won a heavyweight championship, there was riots in America. Jackie Robinson became a Dodger. There was riots in America. Anytime it could be a sports event and blacks can do well, and whites go out killing black people that night. And they saying in the state of Georgia, if Stacey wins, there's going to be violence. So I'm just saying, this is a tradition of white supremacists. This is a tradition of white sickness. And I tell black people all the time, we have overcame every obstacle they threw in our way. We're senators, we're governors, we're state legislators, we're judges, we're doctors, we're scientists, we're inventors, we're CEOs, we're educators, and we still the trash, man, like Dr. King went to saving Tennessee. So we do it all. And the longer this country lasts, the stronger we become, and people around the world begin to see that black inventors, black scientists, black labor built this country, because we begin to tell our own story. And as we tell our own story, other people get angry, because our story is a story of success, not failure. Our story is a story of overcoming every obstacle, including death, including being 3/4 of a man, a fifth of a man, including 400 and some year Holocaust, that has never happened nowhere on this earth. So to bring it back to your topic, stand your ground, white people put stand your ground together when black people begin to rise and feel good about themselves. White people always try to put something on the books where they can slaughter us. Nobody cared about Zimmerman. Zimmerman just happened to get caught up in something that he didn't even know what he got caught up in. And I went to jail 9 months over the Zimmerman killing Trayvon case, so I truly understand it. But what happened to NRA, which is the biggest lobby group in America, one of them anyway, was going around buying senators and congressmen and state legislators and putting legislations on the books in each state, stand your ground, basically to protect white people. Zimmerman just happened to kill Trayvon, and they decided, let's try to use this stand your ground to see if it'll work. And so Zimmerman got the best law team you can get from the NRA. Then the NRA used this influence to get the judges and everybody in Florida. And the case was won. It was never about Zimmerman. It was about stand your ground. And it was about nobody in America, even though what stand your ground meant until Zimmerman used it. Then all of a sudden people started looking at their state legislators and say, wait a minute, stand your ground is on the books in Georgia. Stand your ground is on the books. They had slipped it from state to state on the books, but people didn't know about it. So
but
they had to win that case.
It was under a different name. Stand your ground was under a different name in some states.
Right. But I'm just saying, once they decided that they were going to use that Zimmerman case as a platform to make it work, they spent millions of dollars to do it. And they bought and corrupted a lot of people. Now Zimmerman, as we know, was in court this week. Zimmerman was a terrible person to try it with because his history was so terrible. The man was going to, some people didn't know at the time when he killed Trayvon, the man had to go to 12 months of anger management because he was buying an underage child liquor, and there was a raid on the place, and he fought the police, saying he wanted to be a police, but he fought the police. But since his dad was a Jewish judge up the street in Florida, he got his son a pat on the back or a pat on the hand. He ended up doing 12 months of anger management, but they say something was wrong with Zimmerman. He had two fiancés who filed restraining orders on him. And for a woman to go down and do the paperwork and go through what it takes to get a restraining order, you have to really be doing something to them. So two people that he was going to marry in so-called love filed restraining orders on him. And then we know now, right after the case, the wife who stuck with him through the case had to file a restraining order on him, and her father had to file a restraining order. And the crazy man been in jail, in and out of jail ever since. So with all of that said, this country will not ever look back and say the court system blew it on this one. Zimmerman was crazy. Zimmerman did kill that boy because he's an angry, dysfunctional lunatic. They still uphold Zimmerman as a hero, but it's beginning to fade out now because he just continuing to be Zimmerman every week. But this is how America would throw the lily right white boy in your face, then the white boy let them down before the world, and they still won't admit that they blew it on this case. That's why we can never look to the white man to give us justice. We can never look at the white man to give us what we need. We got to keep doing what we did as slaves and what we did as free people and what we did as kings and queens in Africa. We got to keep being us. And as long as we keep being us, America is going to always be mad at us, because the reason America is mad at black people, the reason Europeans and westernized people, Belgians, I don't care who they are, Italians, whoever they are, mad at white black people all over the world, because they know something that we don't digest too well. They know